When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. It's coming home. It's coming home. It's coming. Brexit's coming home. Now, I don't apologise for that, because that's the way I'm feeling. In just 4 days' time, we will have left the European Union. And it's looking good already, as the whining is reduced to a tiny handful of millionaires, champagne socialists and members of the acting fraternity. The rest of the country is preparing to celebrate slamming the door shut on the likes of Leo Varadkar and his petty, small-minded view of Britain and the world. Unlike the Taoiseach of Ireland, a nation that had to be rescued financially by the European Union and which had to have the euro imposed on it against its will, I am not one of those people who thinks that we are a small country. Quite the reverse, in fact. The United Kingdom has the equivalent GDP of 18 of the EU's smallest countries. It is the biggest export destination for the European Union. It is the fifth largest export destination in the world, and it has the third most potent defence force on the entire planet. So if only the arrogant EU wasn't in such decline, I might even feel sorry for them. Stuart Jackson joins me this morning, former Tory MP for Peterborough, to celebrate the big party we are all going to have come Friday at 11 p.m. 03444991000. As ever, I would like you to join us in celebrating that. We'll also be touching upon, of course, the ridiculousness of Prince Andrew, a man who gave an interview to the BBC in the hopes that he would actually somehow get himself off the hook from the charges that he was consulting with a paedophile by the name of Jeffrey Epstein. It turns out now, even though he told Emily Maitlis that he would be more than happy to cooperate with the American authorities into any investigation as to what went on with human trafficking and all the rest of it, so far, the FBI have had absolutely nothing from him. They've had no cooperation from Prince Andrew, the Queen's favourite son, and they don't look as if they're going to get any either. His words at the time were, "If my legal advisors tell me it's a good idea, then I will do it." So we can only assume from that, presumably, that his legal advisors have told him it's not a very good idea. Also coming up this morning, I'm finally going to meet Ecotricity millionaire Dale Vince, the man who paid Jolyon Moron thousands of pounds to stop a no-deal Brexit in the Scottish courts. Eco-businessman and owner of Forest Green Rovers, Dale, will be attempting to win the argument on climate change. I'll give him two chances, slim to none. I'll also be asking him what he's going to do now that the EU won't be able to fund his business anymore. 0344 499 1000. Later on, we'll be discussing why we shouldn't talk about sport in front of women because they don't understand it, and why artists now want to be called creative practitioners, for heaven's sake. And I'll be telling you why the BBC now has to fire Gary Lineker, a man who makes, from the public purse, believe it or not, £144,000 a month. That's right, £144,000 a month. That means you could literally buy a Ferrari once a month for an entire year. We're live streaming today again on YouTube and Facebook, so you can watch us as well as listening to us. And of course, we want to hear from you, the voices of common sense. You're listening to me right here on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, it was only a few moments ago that I met Dale Vince for the first time, and I'm still standing. We shook hands, and as we always do, we will now have a conversation about a great many things, which we will probably not agree much about, but we'll be very civilised. You and I think, have been the kind of gold standard of how to argue about Brexit over the course of the last, 6 months or so? Oh.
If you say so. We certainly have kept it civilised. I agree with you about that. And, I don't know any other way to discuss stuff.
Well, exactly right. Well, welcome to the studios, first of all. Welcome to London. You've come up, is it Gloucester sort of way
Gloucester
way. So how did you get here today? That's my first question.
I knew you were going to ask me that, and I was going to say helicopter.
Yes, but you didn't come by helicopter, did you? Did you?
No.
No, did you come by electric motorcycle?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Just you on your own, then? Where have you parked it?
I folded it up and put it in my bag.
Okay, because, I mean, you have taken a bit of flack from some of my listeners who've always said that, you know, it's all very well for Dale to talk about having an electric motorbike, but not everybody can afford them. But I suppose we should really kick off with the timely conversation, which is about Brexit, because on Friday, Brexit is happening. Are you one of those who's now basically just accepted that it's happened and we'll see where it all goes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no point not accepting that it's happened or it's about to happen. It's happening, isn't it? I mean, I get that completely. And, we just have to live with the consequences, don't we? I think, you know, we've got bigger issues to deal with in climate change, and Brexit is going to hamper that for us. For me, the silver lining in all of this is that Boris Johnson and the others, you know, the Brexiteers in government, now have to own this. There's no more excuses they can make. They can't blame the courts, Parliament, the EU, anybody else. For the next 5 years, all of the impacts of Brexit will become clear, and they have to own it at the next election.
Yeah, I think so. But, of course, all of those predictions that have been made over the course of the last year or two by people who didn't want to see it happening are still predictions. And so we still don't really know whether those dire predictions are going to happen. I mean, you see people like Lord Adonis talking about how I'm not going to handle the 50p coin because it's got some words on it that I don't like. I mean, you start to go, really? I mean, is that where we are now with political discourse?
Yeah, I think the reduction in GDP of our country is not a prediction. That's been measured at $130 billion since the referendum vote. And the forecast is by the end of this year, the total cost of Brexit so far will be $200 billion.
And yet we are the fastest growing economy in Europe.
Could have been faster.
But you can't complain about that, can you? Surely.
That $200 billion, let me just say this, is equivalent to everything we've paid the EU in the last 47 years.
It may well be, but if everything is so bad about Brexit, how come that Germany, France and all the other European economies are performing even worse than ours?
Yeah.
I haven't got an answer for that.
I don't have an answer to that. Peculiar way to look at it, Mike.
Well, it's not, though.
$200 billion, that's what I got to say to you. You know, our GDP has shrunk by something like between 2 and 3%. It's unnecessary pain. Why have we done that to ourselves? What have we gained?
But what I'm saying is that you're putting 2 and 2 together and making 7. Because what you're saying is that Brexit has caused it. What I'm telling you is that economies around the world have been performing pretty badly, right? And particularly in Europe. And for us to have been performing better than everywhere else in Europe, I could conclude, is because of Brexit.
But the experts who have looked at this have said $130 billion is the cost so far of Brexit. Our economy has shrunk further than it would have done had we not voted to leave the EU.
We've put $150 billion into the NHS every single year. You know, you might argue that that's money better spent, but nevertheless, it's $150 billion. It's still a very large amount of money. So actually what you're talking about is less than 1 year's budget for the NHS.
Oh,
it's okay. You see what I mean? You can talk about... This is the great thing about politics.
Let's throw it away, then.
Well, it's not about throwing it away. But
what have we gained from Brexit so far?
What have we gained? Mm. Well, we've made a lot of people shut the hell up. We've managed to get lots of idiots out of Parliament who voted against the will of the people and who then had to take a hit at the by-elections... general elections that they were misrepresenting the people in. And so I think we've got a much more now honest Parliament, which is made up of people who were voted and put there as a result of the Brexit discussions that were had.
It was definitely a Brexit election, I get that.
It was.
And the previous one wasn't, and the referendum kind of threw a spanner in the democratic works, didn't it? But it was a close vote, so I don't think you could just slag off half of Parliament for being undemocratic because they had principles, values and beliefs which they didn't give up because of the referendum vote.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that they got the sack, effectively, by the people who didn't agree with them. That's the way democracy works, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the way
after all,
what the election did.
So now that we are about to walk into a sort of independence world, if you like, what do you think is going to... I mean, you're a businessman, for example. I mean, Ecotricity is a green energy company. I've been told by people, and I have no idea whether it's true, that you were getting grants from the European Union, were you?
No.
So you're not going to lose out then?
No.
So your business is going to be fine?
Well, I think our whole economy is shrinking and will continue to shrink. There'll be impacts, there'll be problems. And, you know, we live in this country, so we'll feel those impacts in the way that anybody in this country does. We have no particular link to the EU that will cause a problem. We don't export to the EU, for example. We don't have grants or subsidies from the EU. So, you know, it's fairly neutral in that respect for us.
So why will you do worse in the next, say, 12 months economically as a company?
Well, I think the whole economy will, Mike. And when you're a business in an economy that's struggling, you know, you feel the impact of that. You can't help but that. You know, it affects all of us.
So here at Talk Radio, we're actually growing. And one of the reasons we're growing is because we're doing something that's quite popular and people like it. And so more and more people are listening. So we're making more and more money.
That's good.
Maybe you're just in the wrong business.
Yeah, maybe that's right. We should start up our own radio.
Well, you could. I mean, you know, the reason why people are coming to us and not watching Sky and not listening to some of our other rivals is because they're fed up listening to people moaning and groaning about how awful everything is going to be, and actually would rather listen to a slightly more upbeat message, which is all about, you know, Britain actually being a standalone country and being quite good at certain things.
Yeah, I mean, we are good at certain things, no dispute there. And people like your message, Mike, I get that, and that's good for you and good for your station. But, you know, and as long as you keep it accurate and truthful, I've got no
well,
problem with
it. Well, I don't know any other way to do it. I mean, as it says on my Twitter feed, it's the most balanced show on the radio. Which, as you could attest to. Let's talk a little bit about climate change. We've just been in Davos, where Prince Charles took a private jet to tell us all that we should be paying more green taxes. The issue that people have with, I think, climate change is that there's no question that the dial has been moved, I think, over the course of the last 12 months. Whether you like Extinction Rebellion or not, they've certainly brought attention to it in a way that perhaps not everybody was thinking. Greta Thunberg, whether you like her or not, has made an impact. However, I think if all that comes from it is more green taxes, people are going to say, enough already. We're paying a lot of green taxes. Why are we paying more?
Yeah, well, there's an interesting question. When you said we'd been to Davos, you didn't mean Talk Radio, did you?
No, we didn't go to Davos, no. But, I mean, we
I
were...
I didn't go either.
No, my daughter was there, though. She was there, yeah. So, technically, the Graham family was represented.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, this
she
whole...
was working. She wasn't on a jolly with Prince Charles.
Better than being on a jolly with Prince Andrew.
Well, that's true, but I couldn't possibly comment.
Look, this whole thing about green taxes, you know, it's kind of like a misrepresentation of what's actually happening. If you look at the way we tax and subsidise energy in Britain, for example, we spend twice as much supporting fossil fuels as we do green energy, $10 billion a year versus $5 billion a year.
But we all pay a green tariff, don't we, on our energy bills?
Yeah, there are green taxes, you could call them that. They're like stealth taxes because what the government have done is create legislation that causes energy companies to charge the two or three different versions of them.
And where does that money actually go? Does it just go to the general exchequer?
Some does. Like the climate change levy, for example, goes to the exchequer. The renewables obligation goes to generating projects. The feed-in tariff goes to most of it, I think, to people with solar panels on the rooftops, which is a regressive kind of green tax because that increase in energy bill is for everybody. So people that can't afford solar panels, can't even afford their energy bills a lot of the time, are paying better off people to have solar panels. So I think, you know, feed-in tariff was a mistake. They're the three I can think of. The new one on the block is the contract for difference, and that's actually going to support the nuclear industry more than anything else if they ever get Hinkley built.
And what's your view on the nuclear industry in terms of it being built and also it being built by the Chinese?
And the French.
Well, the French have always been involved, haven't they?
Yeah, I think it's madness.
You're not in favour?
Well, I mean, if you look at EDF's track record, I think they've got three projects on the go around the world, and collectively they're decades and billions behind budget. And, you know, this project will never get built on time or on budget. The electricity is the most expensive in the world ever. And it's coming too late for us to help us reduce carbon emissions to, you know, to halt climate change. And we could have spent the money on far better things. And it's going to leave this toxic legacy of waste for something like 10,000 years. You know, whichever way you look at it, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. But the other thing that a lot of people are critical of as well is the kind of doomsday scenario that we get fed all the time by people like Greta, who talks about how the house is on fire and we're not doing enough about it. And it seems to me that we're doing more than anybody else in any other country. And I know that that's not an argument which is necessarily one that you would agree with. But my point is always, well, you know, if I go to California and I sit in a motorway traffic jam, which has got 16 lanes, eight going in either direction, which is the San Diego Freeway, 405 as it's known, the distress way from Los Angeles down to San Diego. I mean, you know, the idea that I don't drive my Range Rover in London in order to sort of save the climate seems a bit ridiculous, doesn't it?
I don't know, it's a funny kind of comparison to make, isn't it?
Well, not really. It's a bit like, no, it's a bit like me saying, look, if I take a thimble full of water out of Lake Michigan every single day, will it be able to drain the lake? No, it won't.
Thing is, all of the small contributions that we individually make to resource depletion, climate change, whatever you care to mention, they're all adding up. There are like nearly 8 billion of us on the planet now, and there was a time when we could get away with the thought that we can't possibly change the world or the climate because, you know, our individual actions are too small and there aren't that many of us, but there are 8 billion of us now, and we have changed the planet.
Yeah, but most of those 8 billion people are not here.
They don't need to be here to have an impact. We all live on the same world. They're here in that sense, aren't they?
They are, but as they get more and more sort of wealthy, and I don't mean that in a sense of, you know, having yachts and flying around in private jets, but, you know, the world is now a much better and richer place. There are fewer people living on less money than there ever were. You know, it's a much more modernised globe, and people, as they get more kind of affluent, want more stuff. As a general rule, don't they? I mean, in India, for example, people want air conditioning machines now because they can afford them, whereas maybe 15, 20 years ago, they couldn't.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people in India that don't even have electricity at the moment, and in China as well. And, you know, that's human nature, I guess, to want those things, and that is part of our problem. But who are we to say they can't have them?
Well, exactly. That's my point. So, I mean, why should we be going without things while other people in perhaps more developing countries are asking for more things and getting them?
But they have less.
Well, that doesn't mean that we should be giving things up, does it?
They're starting with less, aren't they?
So what, are we all supposed to be living in some kind of communist state where everybody has the same thing, like the same car, the same fridge, the same cooker?
I think actually we've got to acknowledge that we do live in some kind of communal state. We all live on the same planet. And if we don't respect that fact and take notice of the difference we're making, the changes that we're bringing, and if we don't act collectively, then we're going to create a place where none of us can live.
No, I get that, but we're not acting collectively. We're acting almost unilaterally in this country. We're the first government and the only government thus far to commit to carbon neutrality, albeit that by too late for Greta Thunberg to like it. You know, we're the first country and only country, as far as I'm aware now, that has the air tax for every time you get on a plane, you pay a green tax to fly. Nobody else does that. You know, we do a lot of things that nobody else does. So we're not really acting collectively.
No, I disagree, Mike. You know, we act through the UN, don't we? We're part of the Paris Climate Accord. I mean, that's like 190-odd nations of the world.
But none of those 198 nations have done what we've done and are not doing it.
Yeah, I think some of them have done much more than we've done.
Like who?
Germany, they spend three times as much supporting renewable energy as they do supporting fossil fuels.
They still burn coal in Germany, though.
Yeah, but they have the balance right. We spend twice as much on fossil fuels as we do renewable energy, so we have to address that balance. China, how many electric buses do you think they have on the road?
In China? Well, I don't know, but I can tell you how many coal-fired power stations they build every week.
See, you only see one side. You've got to look at both sides. 400,000 electric buses on the road in
they
China.
They also eat bats.
Do you know how many
I mean, that's not a very good thing either, is it?
Do you know how many we have?
I don't know.
It's probably closer to four.
But we don't eat bats.
It's probably closer to four.
Well, so far we don't have the coronavirus, although I don't know. I've got some news to break for you, by the way, and we'll talk to somebody about this later on. I've got some sad news. Nicholas Parsons has just passed away at the age of 96 after a short illness. He, of course, might be known to many of you as the man who was the host of Soul of the Century, amongst other television shows many, many years ago.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, you might remember yesterday, I started the show, or at least a part of the first hour of the show, with a bit of a rant about the BBC. I was not happy that the BBC had managed to mistake LeBron James for Kobe Bryant, the man who was killed tragically in a helicopter crash in Southern California the night before last. Now, the BBC have made many mistakes in their time. The BBC currently are at the heart of an argument about whether or not their licence fee can be justified. Well, guess what? Gary Lineker has now entered the fray. Gary Lineker has given an interview to The Guardian in which he basically says that the licence fee should be made voluntary. Now, Gary Lineker makes something like £1.7 million a year out of the BBC. That's the equivalent of £141,666 per month, every single month. That means Gary Lineker can basically buy himself a Ferrari every single month off the back of the BBC licence payers. That's you, that's me, that's everyone that lives in the country that has any form of television, because you are forced to pay the BBC licence fee. You are not asked to pay it. You are not asked if you'd like to make a contribution towards it. You are told if you do not pay it, you will go to prison. People who are elderly are taking to court every single month of every single year in this country because for some reason they've made a mistake over their TV licence. People are getting locked up as a result of not paying their TV licence. And quite frankly, I think it's an absolute disgrace. For Gary Lineker, a man who has got very, very wealthy off the back of those licence fee payers, I think it's a disgrace that he's now dissing the organisation which gives him all that money. He's basically saying what I would say in this situation: don't bother listening to the advertisers, don't bother listening to any of the adverts on this station. They're all rubbish. I wouldn't bother. Don't spend any of your money on them. Instead, spend it on something else. Gary Lineker is basically doing the sort of thing that you should never do on your own doorstep. And I think Gary Lineker now is gone beyond the pale. I'd like to ask him what he meant by this interview that he gave to The Guardian, in which he said that the licence fee should become voluntary. But I can't ask him that, because despite the fact that he is a public figure, despite the fact that I pay his wages, he's blocked me on Twitter. He blocked me on Twitter because I asked him a question. The question was, I hope you're paying enough tax on all of that money you make from Walker's crisps. And he didn't answer me. Instead, he blocked me. Gary Lineker is a disgrace. The BBC are still a disgrace. But the good news is, he said it all just in time for Plank of the Week, which goes out later on today. So he may make it to the top 10 of Plank of the Week. And he may even make it to the top 10 of Plank of the Month. Gary Lineker, goodbye. Good riddance. We'll still watch Match of the Day if you're not there. Don't go around telling people that they should volunteer to pay you. I'll tell you what, I volunteer to not pay your salary. How about that? And you can go from 141,000 a month to zero. Thanks very much indeed. Let's talk about Prince Andrew. Norman Baker is here. Norman, a very good morning to you.
Hello. Is he Plank of the Week, Prince Andrew? He could be a contestant.
Well, do you know what? Prince Andrew was my Plank of the Year for 2019, and that was how all this this whole organisation Plank of the Week started, because we decided that Prince Andrew, having given that interview to Emily Maitlis and then thinking that that would make the story go away, was such a ridiculous decision that it could only have been made by an idiot. It now appears, though, that this story may be more serious than we thought, doesn't it?
It is more serious because he's come out, of course, in this country and said, I will cooperate with the FBI, I will even give evidence if they ask me to give evidence. And he's given that story to make everybody feel good about him over here. And now the truth is out, which
yes.
is that, the exact opposite of that, which he's refusing to cooperate. And zero cooperation is what the FBI have said. And he's clearly not intending to help them at all.
No, quite. Because, I mean, the thing is, if the FBI have said that they've approached him and he basically has given them what, in their words, is zero cooperation, all I remember is the clip in which he said, if my legal advisers tell me that I should talk to the FBI, then I will. I can only now draw the conclusion that his legal advisers have told him not to.
Well, that's a logical conclusion to reach, as a matter of fact. But, you know, Prince Andrew's whole involvement with this affair is rather peculiar. You've got Virginia Roberts, or whatever her name is these days, saying that they were closely intimate.
Yes.
His flight logs show they're in the same place at the same time. There's a photograph of him with his arm around her, although he says he had no recollection of meeting her, and denies the photograph is real, which is a bit surreal.
Mm.
You know, the thing doesn't stack up very well, does it?
Well, it doesn't. And also, you know as well as I do, there is such a thing as a non-denial denial, as they used to say in the Watergate days.
You
know, to say that I don't recall meeting somebody is not the same as saying I never met that woman.
No, that's exactly right. But, you know, the whole thing about Prince Andrew is, to be honest, stinks to high heaven. And as I set out in my book, it's not just all the business with Jeffrey Epstein. It's all his financial dealings and association with dodgy dictators around the world.
Well, exactly right. But what has he got to lose here? Because, one of the many questions that people have put to me is, surely it's easy enough to go back through the logs of the Royal Protection Squad, if nobody else, to check where he was on that famous night, whether he was at Tramp or whether he was, in fact, at the Pizza Express in Woking or whatever, you know?
Well, absolutely, it's easy to find out, and those things will all be recorded. They'll be recorded for all sorts of reasons, not least of all for mundane reasons in terms of paying the Royal Protection staff. They have to know where they are, it's on their overtime logs.
Right.
So it'll all be found. I've got a feeling that he doesn't want to look in case the evidence he finds is not to his liking.
Well, quite. But also, there may well be other things that come out, presumably, if he is quizzed by the FBI, because they have other information which we maybe don't know about yet.
Well, what we know about the Americans and the FBI is they will rigorously pursue these matters. They will pursue them no matter who the people are, which is how it should be in a judicial system. And they won't bother if he's a prince of the realm. There's no such bother about that.
No.
They'll try and find out the truth. And I've got a feeling that on this side of the Atlantic, there are one or two individuals who don't want the truth to be found out.
No, exactly. And where does that leave the FBI? Does it mean that they can come here and forcibly make him speak to them or not?
No, they can't. I mean, if he lands in the US, he can be subpoenaed to turn up in court. It's a bit like the reverse of that case of that American diplomat's wife,
yes,
who's escaped to the US and won't come back. I mean, Andrew's escaped over here and won't go over there again.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, it'd be pretty embarrassing for a member of the royal family to be basically persona non grata in the United States of America and similarly unable to go to even an event at the ambassador's residence in Regent's Park.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, because, of course, that's American territory,
yeah,
legally, and he could, in theory, be held there.
Well, exactly. I mean, how embarrassing is that if you've got a member of the royal family, senior member of the royal family, whatever you want to call him, he still is, being unable to go to a Western democratic country?
Well, exactly so. And we've got Prince Harry, of course, in Canada, who's distanced himself from the royal family as well. You know, this whole thing leads me to conclude that we need to look at the royal family generally. The royal family should be a narrow group of people based with the Queen, Prince Philip, then you've got Charles and Camilla, then you've got William and then Prince George. That's what it should be. That's what the royal family should be. You know, all the other people really are irrelevant to the royal family. Look at the royal families in Belgium, in Luxembourg, in Sweden, in Norway. They don't have all these vast numbers.
Mm.
You know, the front cover of my book, there's 44 of them on the balcony in Buckingham Palace. What are they all doing there?
I know. It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, one of the things that I thought was originally a bit of a mad idea, but I'm warming to it. Peter Hitchens from The Mail on Sunday wrote a piece about how he believed that we should keep the monarchy, but just get rid of the royal family. So that basically what you would have is once the Queen passes on, you would have a sort of titular head who was some kind of I don't know, sort of regimental person who would hand out gongs to people and appear at various ceremonies. But there would be no actual subsidised royal family. I'm beginning to think that's not a bad idea.
Well, it's a bit like the royal families in other countries,
yeah,
which are vastly cheaper than our royal family.
Yeah.
And actually, what he's describing is what's called a precedent. It's quite normal in many countries to have a president who's ceremonial, separate from the political arrangements. It's not a good idea to have a president who's also effectively a prime minister, which is what they have in America. That's not a good idea. But, you know, in Germany, for example, or Ireland, these sorts of places, they have presidents who cut ribbons and do ceremonial things, and they don't get involved in politics. And it's good to have that separation, but you don't necessarily need 44 people in the balcony to carry it out.
Yeah, but all of these stories are going to feed into that Republican machine, aren't they? I mean, basically, there's very little justification now for certainly Harry and Meghan to be part of it. Very little justification for Andrew to be part of it. Princess Anne is getting to a point where she's not able to do too much. Prince Philip, obviously, is more or less retired. The Queen is getting pretty old. I'm not really looking forward to King Charles, I have to say.
No, well, I think Charles isn't a very good history in terms of royal personages. The last one had his head chopped off, didn't he? Was actually Charles II. So, I mean, that's not a helpful precedent.
No,
I mean, I think.
But Charles, also, I mean, the idea that Prince Charles goes in a private jet to Davos, where he addresses the throngs of the wealthy, tells us all we should be paying more taxes, and then shakes hands with Greta Thunberg.
Well, the fact is, I mean, Charles's attitude towards it is rather feudal. He thinks that, we should be all out there as peasants, you know, scything the grass,
yes,
without involving any carbon emissions, while he does what he wants. I mean, that's a pretty odd attitude to take and not one that's going to go down very well. He seems to be completely blind to his own behaviour.
Mm, exactly right. And what is the future for Harry and Meghan? Because presumably they still have yet to work out what to do about this Sussex Royal trademark, whether they're going to be able to sell themselves to the highest bidder, whether or not they're going to be trashing the royal family name all over the place in order to make a buck. You know, it's all very, yeah, very distasteful, isn't it?
Well, it's just distasteful, but I mean, I don't mind. If they want to disappear from the royal family, that's their right. If they want to be completely individual and private, you know, a bit like Posh and Becks, you know, named around the world to sell things, that's fine.
Yeah, but we don't give Posh and Becks any money unless we choose to buy their stuff. I mean, why the hell are we still paying these people any money?
Well, that's precisely the point. And they haven't given up HRH. They said they're not using it, but they've kept it. Now, the reason that's important is because if you keep HRH, which they have done, it means they qualify for free security. It means they qualify for free travel. It means they have access to Buckingham Palace and the staff there. They haven't given up very much at all. And do you know something else? If you work out how much security is going to cost in Canada, they're going to cost us more money than they did before, not less, more.
I know. It's a shocking state of affairs, but it seems to have sort of disappeared off the front pages now, as if everybody's going to forget about it. But, you know, it's still quite an important story, isn't it?
It's not going to disappear. I mean, they've had a lull for a couple of days, but, you know, the damage has been done, and it's going to eat away. You know, it's got there's a rotten system there. It's going to eat away at it. And, you know, if Charles has got any sense when he becomes king, then he will do a drastic pruning of the royal family and complete change. Because, you know, in the end, the tree that doesn't bend is going to break.
Yes, no, I think you're absolutely right. Norman, thanks very much indeed. Norman Baker there. He's the author of a book called And What Do You Do? What the Royal Family Don't Want You to Know. He's a man that I think we should be talking to a lot more on this show about a great many things, because he was a former transport minister, former Lib Dem MP, of course. But the Prince Andrew situation has now reared its ugly head again. And surely to heavens, the problem for Prince Andrew is that basically, if he's refusing to talk to the FBI and he's going to hide out and not cooperate with them, then they're going to come for him. And someday, at some point, he will have to answer their questions. And the sooner he gets that over and done with, the better. Because the longer it takes for him to avoid them, the more it looks like he's got something to hide. And that's going to damage not only him, but the entire royal family. We saw the Queen only around Christmas time trying to rehabilitate Andrew, took him to Sandringham, made sure that she was standing next to him at one point. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, Andrew is a liability. He got mixed up with the wrong people. It may well be that he didn't do anything terrible, but we need to know what he did and who he did it with and why. This is Talk Radio.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, normally speaking, Kate would be on this afternoon at 4 o'clock with Eamon Holmes, but Eamon's off today, so she's not on. But she's on this show, so at least you get to have your daily dose of Kate Ball. So, Kate, very good afternoon to you.
Hi, Mike. Afternoon.
Now, I've heard some ridiculous things in my life, but this, I have to say, takes the biscuit. I mean, I'm not sure how I can put these people on the planks of the week list, but I mean, the idea that you're not supposed to talk about football in front of women at work because it might upset them is just ludicrous, isn't it?
I actually had to check the date on this, that it wasn't written in 1972, because it feels like something that we would have read decades and decades ago. And in intending to try and call out sexism, the Chartered Management Institute head, Anne Frank, has actually become sexist herself.
So yes.
She's kind of reversed it on herself. I think it's totally ridiculous. The fact that she's trying to almost censor football chat in an effort for women not to feel left out. Well, I feel left out if I'm not included in the conversation. So it doesn't matter whether you're a sports fan or not. There are various different sorts of banter or chat within workplaces. The fact that men shouldn't talk about football, or women, therefore, shouldn't talk about football, but we should be busy talking about kittens and makeup instead.
Yes, knitting.
Just insane. strange.
I know. Also, had she not heard? Has she not heard of the fact that there was a rather successful Women's World Cup last year? That there's quite a lot of women who now play football. That actually in America, it is the biggest participation sport for women. And that basically people like yourself and others have been in the business of sports journalism for quite a long time. Thank you.
Yeah, well, it's the biggest team sport for girls and women here too.
Is it? Right.
Yes, and also, you know, 11.7 million viewers watched the England-USA semi-final at the World Cup during the summer. That was only beaten by that Gavin and Stacey Christmas special, by the way.
Yes. Even I wrote a double-page spread in a newspaper about it.
So if she thinks we can't join in, she's got another thing coming. The thing that really alarmed me, Mike, and this is just where it gets utterly bonkers, you know, I can sort of see her opinion if she's talking about men having chats and excluding people and not being aware that people aren't included and maybe changing the conversation or being open to other sorts of conversation. I can sort of see where that comes from if it's just football chat and only football chats that you can engage with your workmates on. But when she says that it's very easy for football chat, banter, VAR talk, to extend to slapping each other on the back and talking about men's conquests at the weekend, she just completely lost me, because I've never worked, and I've worked in kitchens, I've worked in accountancy departments, I mean, I've worked a ton of different jobs, and I have never, ever seen a man talk about a refereeing decision or VAR and that lead on to chat about their sexual conquest. I mean, how does she make that work?
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's obviously a woman who perhaps has not spent very much time in the company of men, because, you know, I've also got some news for her that, as you say, you know, maybe in 1972 that was what a lot of men did, but I don't think there's too many of them doing it now.
No, I mean, clearly she's never spent much time in an office. And, you know, I'm engaged with loads of women involved in football on Twitter and loads of women who aren't. Tons of my friends do not like football. Do they feel excluded when football comes up? No. In fact, my other half doesn't really like football. He's not a close follower of football. What does he do if football chat comes up in his office? He doesn't engage and he starts to chat about something he is engaged in.
Yeah.
You know, football chat then therefore can exclude men as well. The fact is, if we got involved in every bit of banter going on in the office, we'd never get anything done.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's two blokes in our office, right, who continually talk about Charlton Athletic, right, which nobody else is interested in at all. And whenever they talk about it, everybody just walks out of the room because it's so boring.
Yeah, exactly. Love Island's a good one. Game of Thrones is another. I don't watch either of them, Mike. Do I feel left out when people talk about them? No. It might prick my interest. I might laugh or scoff.
Right.
But I'll just move the conversation on, or I just won't get involved. You know, people have a choice about whether they get involved.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not one of those people that likes to talk an awful lot in the office, to be honest, and you might think I'm a bit antisocial.
You do most of your talking on air.
Well, exactly. I mean, believe it or not, I don't actually like to talk much when I'm off the radio, really. I mean, I'm quite happy sitting in complete silence, although the mother of my children might differ from you on that one, but, you know, her constant refrain is, you're not on the bloody radio now, shut up, you know. But I don't really engage in a lot of sort of banter in the office, because I come here to work, you know, so I don't come here for social activity.
I think also nowadays, Mike, I don't know whether you think this, but, you know, office environments are different places. And maybe if it was 1972, we'd be working in an environment where there was a lot more chat, but there's a lot more professionalism now. I've noticed it in my 20 or so year career, even on a news desk, even in, you know, large organisations. There is a professional working environment, not a lot of chat. And actually, if you're going to have a conversation, you sort of do it in a small area rather than shouting. No one really shouts.
No. I mean, I was in Fleet Street in the 90s, right? And you know, people were throwing things at each other and kind of, you know, coming back drunk from the pub at 4 o'clock and shouting. And there was a couple of fights, I'm pretty sure, in the newsroom at the Daily Express when I was there. You know, I mean, it's just, you wouldn't believe what stuff used to go on.
Yeah. The other argument that Anne Frank has got, head of the CMI, is that if you are engaged in sports chats with a group, you can be preferred to others over getting promotions. So that if you're part of their little, you know, sports clique, you might have a better chance of getting a promotion if you've presumably, according to her, got a male boss.
Yes.
Than if you weren't part of that group. And I'd like to, I mean, people sort of say that about smoking, don't they? People who go out to smoke or used to go out to smoke. A lot less people do it now, are more preferred for promotions. I just like to think that the world isn't too much like that.
No,
anymore.
I mean, I was always told that the golf course was the place where lots of deals were done. And I must admit, I mean, I used to play quite a lot of golf, and I've never, ever got a job as a result of playing golf with somebody. And I've never, ever got a promotion as a result of playing golf with somebody, you know. So, I mean, it might be the case that in some businesses that was the way it went, but I'd never experienced that.
And have you ever witnessed men talking about sport, which then leads on to discussions about their sexual conquest?
Right.
Because, you know, as I was saying, if you're the type of person that's going to brag about a sexual conquest at the weekend, you don't need football as a segue.
Well, you really don't, no. And to be honest, if you're going to be that stupid, you better be very... Anyway. And also, you better be a bit careful about who you talk to as well about it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, of course you have. It's just... So much about this article is completely wrong. Broadcaster Jackie Oatley, one of my good football buddies, was on it. And, you know, she said, look, the secret is to discuss it in an inclusive way. So just for management to basically recognise if someone's staring blankly into space and then maybe chip in with another bit of conversation or perhaps steer the conversation towards a different direction if you felt that people in your team were being excluded.
Yeah.
But you know, personally, if you're feeling excluded, that's a little bit snowflake for me. That's a little bit...
Yes, it is. I mean, funnily enough, we had a guy that worked here. We had a guy that worked here in the old building, right, who rather unwisely bragged about his sexual activities one day. And he became the laughing stock of the station. And he got this sort of nickname, and everybody called him this nickname, which I'm not going to repeat. But people just used to think the guy was a complete and utter wally, you know.
Yes.
And he never lived it down. Every time he walked into a room, somebody called him by the nickname, and he just, like, didn't know what to say.
I just don't get how VAR leads on to sexual conquest.
No.
Whoever came up with that, well...
You're doing VAR wrong, if that's the way it's working, to be honest. But apparently she's not a fan of cricket either, because I guess in this week, and when the England cricket team... Although they seem to be playing cricket every single week of the year now, so I don't quite know where that ends. But seemingly she doesn't want you to talk about cricket either.
Well, she says the big issue is many people aren't sports enthusiasts or cricket fans. Nothing against them, she says. I've no idea why cricket fans are different to sports enthusiasts, or you know, quite what she's got against cricket fans. I must admit, I do witness a lot less cricket banter than football banter, but that's just because of the popularity of both sports.
I guess so. And also, I mean, generally speaking, sport is one of those things that kind of does unite people. I mean, for example, when the Six Nations is on, people talk about rugby when they don't normally otherwise do so. When Wimbledon's on, people talk about the tennis, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's
and
one of those things. I mean,
coming up as well, Mike.
Yeah.
We'll have everyone talking. All of us will ditch our normal TV viewing habits and get absorbed in the Olympics. And we'll be discussing the 100 metre final and whatever else is going on.
And also, if she takes any time in her life to watch what happens when England play in a major football tournament, and there are big screens all over the towns and the cities of this country, and guess what? It's not all men out there watching it.
No, totally. You know what? A lot of women I know get engaged in international tournaments, so this is perhaps women who don't follow football on a weekly basis, but, you know, enjoy talking about it, but do get really absorbed in the major tournaments. And they love the whole social side of it too, going out, having some drinks, hosting a barbecue at home. It is a chance for people to unite, and we'll be seeing that this summer through the Olympics. We've got various Euros, you know, World Cups to come as well. So, she's sort of forgetting the very elements of sport here, that it does unite, that we shouldn't be precious about people talking about sport. We should just move on to another topic if we're not comfortable with it. She's sort of telling us how to suck eggs a bit.
Yes, I think that's right.
To me, pretty offensive and pretty sexist.
And it tells you what's wrong with the world in which we live sometimes, because people have got so much advice for everybody else when it's not really required. I mean, they've got a lovely rule in golf. If you are given unsolicited advice, it's a penalty shot against your opponent, i.e. if they come up to you and tell you something you didn't want to know, you can actually penalise them. I think we should make that a rule for the rest of the world.
Yeah, we absolutely should.
And what about your podcast, The Offside Rule? Because I presume that was named after, you know, the people who used to say women can't understand the offside rule.
No, the offside rule. Well, it was actually named after Richard Keys and Andy Gray, and I don't know if you remember that sort of famous incident at Sky Sports when they...
I do indeed.
A female lineswoman, as she was at the time, and sort of said off air, jokingly about her not knowing the offside rule, because of course none of us women know what the offside rule is, just like none of us can engage in sports banter. And we were, myself and Lindsay Hooper, who set it up, were actually working at Sky at the time, and we were a bit frustrated. We were a bit fed up with not being allowed much of an opinion. And so we just thought, you know what, blow it. We're just going to start it up and sort of encourage people to chat about it, have some nice chats between us and our female colleagues. And gosh, 7 or 8 years later now, we've won awards for it. And I just think it's just a different perspective on football.
Yeah.
It's basically, you know, us talking about our careers, about stuff behind the scenes, but also not necessarily doing the kind of overly technical, tactical analysis. It's just life and football mixed together.
Yeah, and look how the world has changed. He's out in Doha in Qatar working for Al Jazeera, shaving his hands for the next show. Which is not in any way meant to be a sexist remark. I hope you take that in the context in which it was meant.
That one, Mike.
Thanks very much, Kate. We'll hear from you soon, I'm sure. Kate Borsay, Talk Radio's Drive co-host with Eamon Holmes. Not today, but she's also co-founder of The Offside Rule. I mean, have you ever heard anything so ridiculous in your life? I've got a lot of you commenting on YouTube. Aaron says this: I know loads of guys who hate football and who don't want to talk about it. Tad says, my elderly mother-in-law can't get enough of cricket and tennis, and she always watches football when she can. Well, of course she does. There's absolutely no reason to suspect that women don't want to hear you talking about football. Unless it's Charlton Athletic, of course. This is Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
I've got text of the day here from Jim, who says, luckily, this is about Huawei, obviously, if the fox does try and get into the hen house and gets stuck in the chicken wire, we know who to call. That'll be, of course, the famous Julian Morb, QC, the man who seems to have done a runner since Boxing Day when he tweeted out that he had beaten to death a fox with a baseball bat dressed in his wife's kimono. What can I tell you? All I can really do to make that better is to talk to Tony Blackburn, one of the great legends of this business, of the radio business altogether, because he wants to talk about his very good friend, Mr. Nicholas Parsons, who sadly has passed away at the age of 96. Tony, a very good afternoon to you.
Yes, good afternoon, Mike. Lovely to talk to you.
Very nice to have you on the show. What can you say about Nicholas Parsons other than that he was just a fantastic and tremendous entertainer and a man who's had a career that spanned literally, I think, 74 years or something like that?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I got to know him in 1967 in the BBC canteen, actually,
really?
When I joined Radio 1, and he was sitting there having some toast. And I went over to him, and he said, lovely to meet you, Brian. and for over 25 years, he always called me Brian, because there was a scriptwriter, I think, called Brian Blackburn.
Okay.
And I sort of never put him right.
That's brilliant. But he must have known later that that wasn't your name, surely.
Well, yes. Later on, I went on one of the shows that he was doing, and he called me Tony. And I said to him, I said, it's the first time you've ever called me by my correct name. And he said, don't be silly. Of course I have. But he always called me Brian up until recently. And I just never thought of putting him right.
It's funny, isn't it? Because that was the year he started, apparently, Just a Minute. And I'm just going to play you a little bit of that, because we just want to be reminding ourselves of his style.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Nicholas Parsons, and once again it's my pleasure to welcome you to Just a Minute, the ever popular and highly entertaining game. And with me today I have four very popular and most entertaining performers. And first of all we welcome someone, a comedian who is very clever at improvisation, and that is Tony Hawks.
And this was from 1999, I believe, when they tried to sort of televise it. They tried that a few times, and it was never as successful as a TV show, was it?
No, it wasn't. I mean, he was very good on television. I mean, he was good on everything. And I saw him, the last time I saw him was about 4 weeks ago, when he invited us to a charity event he was doing. And he looked very frail. And he was with his lovely wife, Annie. They were a dedicated couple. And he had a nasty fall in Edinburgh.
Uh-huh.
That's what happened. And he never quite recovered from that. And his wife tried to stop him going on stage, and eventually had to be, because he was just dedicated. He had such a sharp mind, but above all, he was such a lovely, kind person.
Yeah. Well, strangely enough, I don't remember any of this because I was literally a baby. But my father used to know him because my dad worked for the Daily Sketch and then the Evening News, and I think Nicholas Parsons had a column or something in one of the papers, and so they knew each other. And I used to go with my parents when I was a baby, literally, to his house in Hampstead and paddle around his swimming pool.
Oh, he was just tremendous. I mean, we went to his 90th birthday party, my wife and I, and we gave him a Superman dressing gown.
Right.
And and every time we saw him after that, he said how much he loved it. And I said, well, we gave you that because you are. He was a Superman. And he was But he was so talented, and just a minute, you know, his brain was so sharp.
Yes.
And I remember seeing him at one of the events, and he was very laid back. And as soon as his name was mentioned, he just suddenly came to life. He just loved entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, I remember listening to Just a Minute. It was part of my childhood. You know, my mother constantly had Radio 4 on, as it was then, the home service, listening to The Archers and listening to Just a Minute. And it was that real kind of golden age of radio, wasn't it? Speech radio.
Oh, it was, yeah. I mean, I loved some of those early Radio 4 programmes, you know, the Goon Show and things like that. Mm. I was brought up with that. I mean, we didn't have the amount of radio stations we have now, and Nicholas Parsons was a very important part of that. And I'm just very sad he's left us now. But the last time I saw him, he wasn't looking well. And I thought, oh, dear, you know, I hope he recovers. But he never quite recovered from that fall.
No, I'm looking at some of the pictures of his time from Sail of the Century. And he's surrounded by sort of a lot of bikini-clad hostesses, which is quite amusing. You know, I mean, he's gone through almost every kind of show and style that you can think of in broadcasting, isn't
he? Absolutely. And he was a great sidekick to people as well. And, you know, he just had that comedy about him, but he was just a decent person, and I just loved him, you know. We my wife and I both loved him, and his wife Annie, who was terrific as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking I saw, and I don't know how old this would be, but relatively recently I saw a kind of documentary about him and his house, because he had this lovely house just off Hampstead Heath, which I think is the place that I used to go and visit him in. It was opposite the old Bull and Bush. And, and I think they'd renovated it or something. It might even have been one of those shows about homes of the rich and famous or something. But he was just sitting in his living room talking, and he was just such an easy guy to watch, really.
Well, he was. And, I mean, he was such a good friend, and he'd ring me up now and then just to see how I was, and I'd give him a call occasionally, and we just kept in touch like that. But I used to see him around the BBC. And, you know, he was just one of those great entertainers, and he was a good all-rounder.
Yes.
But Just a Minute, he absolutely lived for that programme, and he only missed about two of them, I think, in the whole run. And it's been going on for years and years.
Right. And there's a great quote here. I'm looking at some of his famous quotes from 2015. I believe I would have got more work if I had been more rugged-looking. We're not sure he could have done any more work, could he?
I don't think he could have done any more work. No, I mean, he was working right the way up to a few weeks ago, and he just loved it. And he particularly loved doing Edinburgh.
Yes.
I mean, I couldn't believe, you know, a man of his age going up there and doing a one-man show.
And it's very tough to do that as well.
Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, he packed the place out, and unfortunately this year he wasn't able to. I think he did one show, I remember, and that was it.
Well, we should all raise a glass. We should
all
raise, yeah, we will, and raise a glass to his memory, I dare say, later on today. Tony, thank you so much. Tony Blackburn, with his own take on Nicholas Parsons, a fantastic entertainer who's been in the business for 74 years. I can't believe that there's anyone that doesn't know who that guy is. I think I would have met him later on in his career as well, at one of those functions I used to do with the Daily Mirror. But a sad end for Nicholas Parsons. But 96 is a pretty good innings, I suppose you'd have to say. Almost made the 100, didn't quite make it there. 03444991000 is the number. We've got time for a couple more calls before we head off to record Planks of the Week. Let's talk to Mike, who's in York, wants to talk about VAT. Hello, Mike.
Good afternoon, Mike.
Afternoon, very well indeed. What can I do for you?
Well, first of all, it's good to know that Gary Lineker was listening to us. Because if you remember, we did slate his salary values.
That's right. And he's now said that we should make the BBC licence fee voluntary.
As I said.
Yes. So would you volunteer to not pay it?
Not only would I not pay it, I just wouldn't. I don't listen to BBC, you know. So,
yeah, very, very good choice.
yeah, but what I would like to talk about is the VAT. I know we talked slightly on it before. Sales tax in America and VAT. I've just done my self-assessment.
And how's it looking?
Depending. From a taxman's point of view, very happy.
So they'll be very pleased, I haven't spoken... Everyone I've spoken to this year about their taxes, they've gone up.
Well, it's got more complicated. And that's why I've retired, really, because at one time I knew just exactly where all the money were going and what my wages... Right. Everything. But now you do it on computer. You kind of scrutinise it yourself. You know, and it doesn't kind of register.
No, I know.
You know, look at something. You don't have an exception report button on your computer anymore. That's another
thing. Well, I characterise it as the money sort of staying in my account for a very short period of time, like a rent sort of scenario, and it goes straight back out again.
Yeah, I don't mind paying tax. It's what they spend it on. And I find it awful that we're paying money abroad when we've got so many people in need here.
Well, this is why I don't approve of giving more money in tax to the government, because they almost always waste it, no matter what
that's
they do.
Right. But that's why I want to talk about sales tax, because that is one of the items, that's one of the taxes that's not regressive. It's only paid at the point of when you sell something on to a customer.
Right.
The VAT is full of fraud. There's tons of it.
Oh, yeah. And, well, the other thing about VAT that annoys me is that they started off, if you're zero-rated, right, where you got to charge at 20%, but you got to claim it back. You got to pay it at 12%, right? They've now changed that to 16%, and they're going to change it to 20% as well, so there's going to be no advantage whatsoever to being zero-rated.
Well, the other thing, I've never paid tax. I've always kept under the 80,000 speed. But the reason why I do that is because I stopped work. I used to stop work in February.
You know,
I'm not going to work after February, and loads of people do that. Well, that's crippling our economy.
What, you mean so they don't have to pay any tax?
Yeah, you don't get involved with VAT. Once you go over the 80,000 threshold, then you've got to register VAT. And once you register for VAT, the costs of the work and things like that just spiral. And it's a madness in so much as if you sell a sandwich in a shop and they walk out with it, that's all right. But if they eat that sandwich in your shop, then they've got to pay VAT on it.
I know. They used to have that ridiculous rule in McDonald's and places like that as well, didn't they? Because if you ordered it to take away and then you decided, actually, it's raining, I'm going to just sit here and eat it, they'd come and tell you you've got to pay some more money.
I've never been in a McDonald's. I don't go do that.
You've anyway, never been in a McDonald's?
No, I don't like it.
Are you joking?
KFC.
How do you know you don't like it if you've never been in one?
It's just the buns and things. Like, I'm not that kind, you know. No.
Well, you don't like hamburgers?
I don't like the breads. You know, like the kind of buns and things like that.
Really?
The stuff in between is nice. But
well, get it wrapped in a piece of lettuce like you would do in one of those gourmet places and then you'd be fine.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, listen, we're at the end of the show, Mike, for heaven's sake. We've run out of time. All that talk about VAT is quite upset me. Don't worry, though, we'll be back tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.